Welcome to this Farming and Water Scotland podcast. My name is Seamus Murphy, and on today's podcast, Pete Wright from SEPA speaks to farmer and beef consultant Robert Ramsey about the alternative watering system that he's put in on his farm. They talk about making sure you pick the right system for your unique situation, and they discuss some of the benefits that Robert has already seen on farm and some of the stuff that he's hoping to see in the future from having the alternative watering system. Remember to like, follow and share on Facebook and Twitter, and more information on all the topics covered can be found on the Farming Water Scotland website. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
It's Peter Wright here from the National Rural Unit team in SEPA, and I'm joined today by Robert Ramsey, who's going to give a little bit of information about alternative waterings and how he has used them on his farm. This is one of a series of podcasts looking at the benefits of improving your farm and how these environmental benefits can also benefit your business. So, Robert, I'd just like to give a bit of introduction to yourself, please. That'd be great.
Yeah, no worries. Hello, everyone. I'm Robert Ramsey. I work as a beef consultant for SEC. And in my free time, I also run the family farm at home, which is 300-acre farm just outside Darvel in Ayrshire, so just on the Ayrshire-Lanarkshire border. There we run about 300 breeding clin ewes and about 40 suckler cows. And in the last few months, we've been installing an alternative watering system that we were lucky enough to get some EECS funding on, which has been an interesting process, but certainly one that's going to benefit us down the line, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll touch on the funding process as well, because that I know is something of interest to everybody, whether it's self-funded or supported through a scheme. It's certainly one of those obstacles that every farm has to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So that's great that we'll be able to chat about that as well. So it's really interesting that you've got two hats on today. You're a consultant and you're an active farmer. So it's great that you'll be able to share your experiences with us, and we'll be able to dig a little bit into this alternative watering that everybody's talking about. So what was the driver? What was the reason that you had to look at an alternative watering? And can you tell us a little bit about what the traditional watering systems were on your farm?
Yeah, so I suppose the initial driver was I've been lucky enough to do a bit of work with Farming and Water Scotland and go to a few events and discuss these issues with farmers. And then I put my other hat on and go home and farm and realise that a lot of what we were doing was potentially breaching some of the GBRs and things. That our issue at home was we're entirely a private water supply. So our spring tank is a third of the way up the farm. So two-thirds of our farm you couldn't get spring water to it. So we were all watered. Every field was watered out of burns, rivers, standing water. Fortunately, in the west of Scotland, we generally do get quite a lot of rain. So it worked fairly well for stock. We got by, but I was aware of the rules and aware of, I suppose, my kind of responsibility, I suppose, to try and walk the talk, if that makes sense. So with that, I mean, we took the decision to put in an alternative watering system, and basically your question there, alternative watering is basically any other option to get water to stock other than a water course or mains water. So going through the options, mains wasn't an option. Spring water supply was probably sporadic enough. We've got enough water for our own needs, but we don't really have enough to, it's amazing how a good house supply, if you put 40 thirsty cows at the end of it, can soon dry up and create problems. It creates quite significant tensions in the house when you run out of water. So with that, we were left with the real alternative watering options. So we went through everything and actually came to what we felt was the best for our site was two separate solar powered systems. Loads of other good options out there, but it was a solar one that we went for.
Okay,
in the end.
Right. Because it's just was it identified by yourself, or did you identify the problems? Was it brought up through a visit from an officer from SEPA or somebody from the department, or was it just something that you thought, right, okay,
no,
you just came up with the ideas yourself?
Yeah, so we're at the very top of the River Irvine priority catchment, but we're in the catchment, but we were out with the operational area, which meant we didn't get an inspection, but as I say, I was quite aware that if we had got an inspection, there'd be a few, and we weren't you know, it wasn't environmental devastation by any means, but there was a few areas that were, there was a bit of poaching and a few issues. So I knew that we needed to get these water margins fenced mm-hmm. off. But the reason we hadn't fenced them off was because we had no water supply mm-hmm. to them. So we had no alternative. So fencing them off was the right thing to do, but practically we couldn't do without a proper water system to go with it. The main driver was to try and keep you guys away from visiting me, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the visits, I mean, you didn't receive one, but the kind of the visits we do, and it's 70% of our findings when we do a priority catchment visit or any kind of farm visit. The problems are related to these livestock getting access to the water course, which is, it's a breach of a rule, but the rules are a little bit different. You probably read them yourself, Robert, that they're not, it's not a license for your farm, that kind of stuff. It's just a rule, which is kind of a best practice rule to encourage people to do things on the farm, which are going to benefit the environment. Also, the rules have been written in a way that it's hopefully should benefit the business. So when it comes to the environmental gains, we're asking farmers and land managers to remove livestock from watercourses and waterings to prevent this significant erosion, which is the word that everybody gets a little bit confused with. So I'm going to ask you, to put you on the spot a little bit. The rules say you should prevent significant erosion, which is what your plan was and what your idea was when it comes to putting in the alternative waterings. But just what do you see as a put your farmer's hat on now, what would you think significant erosion to a watercourse means when it comes to livestock getting access to them?
I suppose it's poaching, isn't it? And it's those kind of pinch points, those hot spots where you've got lots of access or constant access. And it's probably the good, you know, drier, better areas of the field where cattle are actually focusing their attention to get into the burn because it's the easiest place to get in. So you land up with them wet days, challenging days. You land up with obviously quite a bit of traffic there and really causing a problem. And then down the line, you see in really bad examples, you know, if it goes on long enough, you can land up with, you know, real major bank issues and proper, you know, I don't think most farmers would see poaching as a proper erosion, yeah. If that makes sense. But if you do poach it dramatically, you can land up creating a much more significant erosion issue down the line.
It is a difficult one to deal with because it is the traditional way of getting water to most of your livestock. And we understand the pressures that farmers are under when it comes to these kind of things. And it does take quite a lot of effort sometimes to come up with this alternative or even things like fencing areas off and that kind of thing. But it's that long-term impact that is the thing that we're trying to stop. And it's, you know, one spot in one field. You might think, no, it's not too much of a problem. But what we're looking at is the whole idea of this, the looking at catchments or looking at farms as a whole area, is that cumulative impact of lots of these little poached areas. And every one of those poached areas that we can work with a farmer to come up with a solution to remove really means that water quality will start to improve. And on the back of that, there are other benefits as well. So it's great that you identified that yourself. It's even better you didn't get somebody to come onto the farm and tell you you had to do it. Just to say that we're not there just to tell you off. We're there to give you advice and help and that kind of stuff. And when farmers take that proactive step like you have yourself there at putting in an alternative watering, it's a really good step. So that you understand the reason why you're doing it. You knew there's a bit of rules and regulations about it. You realise you had to walk the talk as well as talk it. So just tell us the kind of the next step. You came up with the idea. How did you go about progressing that activity a little bit more?
So it's a thing, had we not got funding to do it, we wouldn't have done the whole system mm-hmm. ourselves. You know, we maybe would have got there through time, but we were very lucky to get EECS funding. But prior to that, I was, rather than fencing off the whole water margin in the whole field, there was a few areas that were kind of key, you know, real challenges, mm-hmm. hotspots, and I was looking to actually take them out. You know, they were probably causing as much, to be honest, but most of it was to do with lameness and okay. cows. There was a couple of areas that were getting quite stony and poached and weren't doing cows any good, and I was looking to fence them off just with a single electric wire, which would have ticked the box at your end and I think benefited at my end. But fortunately, as I say, we put in an EECS application to fence off the remaining water margins on the farm. So we did maybe it'll be 20 years ago, we had a rural stewardship scheme and fenced off a fairly big stretch of the River Irvine. And I suppose doing that, kind of, we saw the benefits, the other benefits, the probably the more woolly benefits biodiversity-wise. And these areas now fenced off are really quite attractive parts of the farm. And before, they were just, you know, they were just basically barren water margin or water edges, really. So always quite keen to do that type of thing, and took that opportunity to fence these off, and then started going through the process of what system would be most suitable. And that's the thing, I think you can't take enough time to actually go through all your options, all the systems available, and take advice and speak to people. The beauty is now these systems aren't new, they've been on the go for quite a long time, that there are good examples and bad examples out there, and it's really quite good to learn from others and not make their mistakes again. You know, make your own mistakes, but try and learn from others as well. So we applied for AICS funding at probably at the 11th hour, to be honest. That's kind of how I roll. So stuffed in an application, and as I say, we were really,
you've already done a bit through previous schemes, through fencing, you've identified some areas that really needed a bit of work, and you thought, let's have a punt and see if we can get in through one of the schemes, and you were successful with that. So when you're putting in the scheme application, did you have to put in a lot of information about the actual method you were going to use, or was it kind of, here are my options that I'm going to look for? Or at that point, had you kind of decided that solar power was the way to go? And which other systems did you look at and rule out? And what was the reasons behind ruling those ones out and eventually going for the solar powered option?
Yeah. So we looked, again, I had done a few projects and things through work and had seen very good examples of solar systems, and also seen PAPA pump systems as well, so ram pump systems. And I actually took some advice from a friend and former colleague who is Adrian Jones, and he talked me through, you know, probably the technical aspects of some of it already knew, but it was good to get the technical end of things nailed down really from an engineer. And we had a look at the PAPA pump for a good while, and it wasn't really fitting with our needs. We could have made it work, but I think we came to the solar option fairly quickly, that it was the best for home. What we went with was a pressurized system for solar. So rather than spending money in storage, we put in extra panels. It's basically like almost like a solar powered main supply that we've got, rather than having a big storage tank and all the pipes and stuff coming from there. So it's been pretty good. When it came to application stage, we did have to see which technology we were going to use. So we had to see basically which standard cost item we wanted. And in that case, I'd put in two solar powered troughs. But thereafter, those solar powered systems, could have been whatever solar powered system you wanted, really. So there's some flexibility. And I think even if I had backed the wrong horse, I think I could have gone back to Scottish Government and said, look, I want a PAPA pump instead. At that stage, they couldn't increase the value of the contract, but I think they could change the technology across. So it's really all about preparation and having the right conversations before you start spending money.
I think that's something which over the last probably about 10 years, the priority catchment work has kind of been highlighting diffuse pollution issues. And when we started doing these inspections and these visits and this kind of working with the farming sector, the information wasn't there. You know, there was a few people who had given it a go. There's quite a few kind of back of the yard kind of versions of solar powered pumps that were working in very specific areas, you know, and it wasn't really the chance of replicating those kind of things. But over the last 10 years or so, the systems that are available are kind of almost off the shelf now, and there is a lot of evidence to say that they work. And there's it even gets down to the point that, you know, you're speaking to your colleagues, neighbours and friends, and they're saying, well, you go for this system because it's got a really good chance of working in your specific area. And there is help out there. You got help through by Adrian, but Farming Water Scotland and SAC have produced quite a number of really good information sheets and lookup data just to make sure that the decisions that the likes of yourselves, when you're putting in these alternative waterings, there's a lot of information there beforehand, before you go about spending your money, because unfortunately not everybody gets the opportunity or the chance or is successful putting in for EECS applications and other funding. So when it's a self-funded job, they can select a little bit better and almost make sure they're not going to be making the wrong decisions and not wasting their money. So it's great that there's lots more information out there, and you can find loads of links to documents on the Farming and Water Scotland website, which I'll give you the reference to at the end of this podcast. So you've made the decision, you put your application in, you were successful with the lottery of that is EECS, and next step is obviously doing the work. Can you give us a little bit of a timeline of that and the positives and negatives about doing it?
So our site at home is it's a pretty unique place. So we've got Loudoun Hill, which is a volcanic plug right in the centre of us. So there's two blocks of land. One's about 80 acres and one's just over 200 acres, and they sit separately. So that's why we've got two systems. But on the home farm, which has got the hill on it, over 200 acres, we rise from 500 feet to 1,100 feet and back down to 500 on the other side. So it's it's a steep, challenging. It's a good dry farm, but quite a challenging place for getting water pressure and things has to be pretty good to get up and over hills and things. So that was a challenge, and again, why probably I opted to take advice from a supplier of the system to make sure we had something with a big enough, capable of producing a big enough head. To be fair, we don't actually go to the very top of the hill with the system. We come up around the side. I think that pump sits about, say, 500 feet and goes to about 800, I think. So it's working quite hard. We actually opted for a system from an Irish system, which is basically specifically designed for high heads. But then got a local contractor to actually install it, and that was done through April and May. So actually it was done through the dry weather, which was really pretty handy, that we were able to get in and about without making too much of a mess. And so he installed our two abstraction points close to the river, installed the pumps themselves, and also the network of pipes that runs out towards all the troughs that are spread across the farm now as well. Yeah, a few weeks of phone calls and challenges, and these types of kind of bespoke projects are always interesting. Don't entirely go to plan, but the end result has been, that's a real revolution for us this year. It's been great. It was enjoyable to do it, but it's been even better to have done it.
Absolutely.
It's done and out of the way.
Yeah, it sounds like quite an impressive project you put in there, and a lot of thought has gone behind it as well. So does that mean that there's no access to the watercourses for livestock now? Is it completely all via trochs and that kind of stuff, or are there still areas that are open?
Pretty much, yeah. There's a few areas where we've still got some smaller burns and things aren't fenced, but they actually don't have any pollution issue. So what we've done, we've installed a trough, and there's two fields that's the case, and there's a watercourse that'll be about just short of a meter wide, runs down the side of both those fields. No major poaching issue, and I'm hoping by we've put two additional troughs in, and hopefully that alternative watering, an alternative place they can go for a drink, will actually take the pressure off that burn. I mean, we don't need to fence it anyway. Both systems are actually, the home farm, it's electric fenced anyway, but the one further down the road, it's capable of taking a electric fence energizer as well, so we can soon stick up a single electric wire and keep cattle back from those smaller, lower priority areas. We can deal with that. We can be flexible with that down the line.
But it's not something, because that's one thing that we always do try and say. We're looking at stopping the poaching and stopping the erosion on the watercourses. Yeah. We're not saying that every watercourse in Scotland has to be fenced from away from livestock. It's picking and choosing the right options and seeing how things go. And that's exactly the kind of thing that you've done there. You know, you've identified the ones that really need to get sorted. You've identified the solution, the alternative watering, and you're just going to keep an eye on those other areas. And if something comes about, you've got an option there to fix it, or you'll have to go and scratch your head and come up with another decision. But it's a great example of just how these ideas and the management of the farm really does progress in line with the regulations, but also in line with how a farm business actually runs. So what benefits have you seen from having it in place? We're not just talking about the environmental stuff, but what are the business benefits you've looked at?
Yeah. To be honest, the environmental benefits don't really, you know, massively. The benefit is that I know if any of you guys come out to see me, I'm compliant. The actual environmental benefits have... I suppose there's some benefits from a soil erosion point of view and a buffer strip point of view and stuff, but on the whole, all the benefits to me are business benefits rather than environmental benefits. So basically it's a win-win. SEPA's getting water quality targets, or we're helping with that, but at the same time, we've now got a more structured... Again, the water system will evolve through the next few years as well. But at the moment, we've got a much more structured watering system, so we've now got a much better, a much more controlled grazing system as well. So we've got I would hate to think people thought I was a rotational grazing guru, because I'm far from it, but we do have a kind of lazy rotation that cattle and sheep are moved around and grass gets a rest. And in the past, that's been fine until we got, you know, a drought, or until we got really wet weather and the weather was deciding where cattle were going rather than me deciding. So by installing this system, we've now got an awful lot more control over our grazing system. And I would hope, as I say, going forward, that'll develop year on year. That'll get better and better, and we can drive stocking rates and reduce, make more use of grass and be less reliant on purchase feed. So that's the main driver for doing it. Was that we actually also got in the EEC scheme as well, we also got a couple of hedges, which were one field that was running, or three fields running together as one. There was actually two old, you know, very poor condition hedges, mm-hmm. with a water course at the back of it. So they're now double fenced and will be coppiced and replanted after the 1st of September. So that's another benefit. You know, that's allowed us to carve up a bit of the farm and get a wee bit more control, a bit more fencing, a bit more infrastructure to control grazing. So it's been good. The other thing, again, probably harder to put a figure on, but a lot of these areas that we've fenced off are actually the real rubbish stuff. Yeah. That is where, you know, fluke will thrive a lot more than cattle will. And it's, you know, it's quite nice to get these poorer areas, some of these poorer areas fenced off, and actually, you know, it certainly won't stop us getting fluke in the southwest of Scotland, but it will help to reduce the burden a bit. And on top of that, two of the significant lengths of water margin that are put in are actually, so it's a double fence water margin. The new fence is on our side, and the other fence is actually the March fence. So we've got a really good double fence buffer basically between us and livestock on the other side. And I should say my neighbours all do a very good job, and I'm probably more of a risk to them than they are to me, but it's nice to have that kind of biosecurity end of things sorted. And again, final probably one, and one that has no financial benefit to me at all, but it's always good to have good neighbours. And another neighbour of mine has, he keeps bees, and the water margin, again, is the boundary between us and him. And we've now got a lot of wildflowers, different species of things that probably were always there but never got the chance to flower. And now with just very light grazing in the autumn, these areas are allowed to flower, and they're buzzing with bees. And, you know, it's really quite a nice place to be. And he's over the moon that he's getting more diversity in of pollen and better feed for his bees. So Yes, it is.
I mean, there's a whole list of benefits there, these multiple benefits that everybody talks about. And quite a lot of these things are going to set you up for the future as well. You know, because one of the big things with everybody's talking about in the industry now is resilience and making sure that your farm is resilient towards attack of a number of different kind of aspects. And we're talking about, you know, livestock health resilience. We're talking about water resilience. You know, this system you've got in place now. Now, how's it handled the drier periods? I know you're down in the southwest. It doesn't happen very often, but, is it resilient?
Yeah, to be fair, so we sit on sand and gravel at home, so it's, you know, it's a dry farm in a wet area, so we get about 45 inches of rain annually. So yeah, it's not often, but when it does go dry, we do have a bit of a problem grass wise, to be honest. So this spring particularly, so the spring and early summer, things did dry up. You know, there was most of the water courses, in fact, all of the water courses except for the river that we used to supply the pumps were dry. So had we been in the old system, we would have had to graze all the fields next to the river regardless. You know, that was the only source of water. So we now have a system that, fortunately, the dry periods, because it's it's the upper course of a fairly major river, we've never seen it dry or anywhere near dry. So there's always water in the burn. Yeah. And any time it's dry, you know, or a prolonged drought also comes with a lot of sun. You know, the solar system actually thrives in the drier period. And that, to be fair, that was also due to, you know, properly designing an abstraction point. So if we had got that wrong, the pumps could have run dry, but because where they're built and the depth that they've gone to, basically the river would have to be dry for the bottom of the pump to run dry. Yeah. A bit of design, and I think we're in a much more resilient position. The one thing I would say is the river, when they were drinking out the river, you always knew the river was there. So water was not really an issue, whereas there is now a fear you've got to make sure that those pumps are operational and actually supplying what we're needing. So it's basically a thing when you're checking cows daily, you check the trough. Yeah. You know, it's just that, and it's a routine you get into, and it's certainly not a big job. And within the first week, we did have an issue where we had no water, and that was just the panels and the pump just hadn't been, they were properly spec'd, but weren't just, they were needing a wee tweak, and a wee tweak, a wee addition later, and we've not had a problem since. And we've actually had a lot of wet. July here was rubbish, so there was a lot of dull days with, no heat, nothing exciting at all, and the solar systems kept up, no problem.
So,
it's been good. Again, another issue that we had is, and everybody should be aware of, is water quality. So if you're currently drinking out of a river, if there's something in the river, which there shouldn't be, cattle have the opportunity to go. I keep saying cattle, sheep also have the opportunity to go to the river. There's something not right, and they can go away and come back again. However, if you pump that into a trough, that's their only water supply. So if there's anything, for whatever reason, something else is in there, you know, we have to be totally aware that the water quality has to be top notch before we start pumping it.
Okay.
So the first thing to do with any alternative watering system, I would say, is take a test and just make sure there's nothing in there that shouldn't be there.
Interesting point that. It's often with open water course drinking, you think the livestock can go and then they can disappear from it and not take the drink if they don't want to. But if it's their only source, it's certainly something worth thinking about that. And I must admit, as a SEPA officer, I didn't really think of that way of, you know, thinking about the water quality. Once it gets into the troughs, you know, it's something definitely worth keeping on. And it's another driver for us to push everybody else in the catchment to be making those improvements for water quality. So it's not just them that are affecting, it's everybody else downstream from them. You know, improve water quality, each farm is going to have a positive impact across the whole area. Interesting point that, Robert. Interesting point, yeah.
And it's worth flagging up as well that, I mean, because of all the good work that all us farmers have been doing, you know, there's actually most watercourses are pretty well fit for drinking. You know, it's just, is there any wee acute problems? And it could even be something as simple as, you know, a drain discharging into, you know, discharging a lot of red ochre or mm-hmm. something into the river, you know, and there's ways and means of dealing yeah. with that just in advance of forcing cattle to drink something that's not ideal. And I think we've always said, if you wouldn't drink it yourself, if you wouldn't consider drinking it yourself, we shouldn't be feeding it to or forcing it down the throats of animals.
Absolutely.
So,
brilliant.
And a thing we haven't addressed at home is, so one of the benefits of fencing off a watercourse and installing a mains water supply would be a removal of the risk of any waterborne diseases. Mm-hmm. So things like leptospirosis would be one on the list. So what we've done hasn't actually addressed that at all. So we've still got that potential risk. But if you look at, and again, what we might install down the line is something like a dosatron or an inline water treatment system. So you can easily put in a filter, a UV filter, or add something to deal with that issue. But again, it's worth flagging that one up, that water quality should be good, and also any risk of waterborne diseases.
Yeah, but it gives you that control yourself, doesn't it? It allows you to do that, because you couldn't put a system like that in a burn, you know, but it does give you that opportunity to...
It's about your level of risk. So if you're in a very intensive livestock area, you're at higher risk. But if you're, you know, again, we are reasonably near the source of the Irvine. There's a few farms above us, one dairy above us, but we're not massively intensive roundabout. So the risk isn't particularly high, but it's certainly worth having a discussion, and probably one to discuss with your vet. You know, if you're doing a health plan or something, run it past your vet and see what they're thinking.
Brilliant. Well, we've covered a lot in our chat here today. Thanks very much, Robert. I mean, there's very few negative things about putting the alternative water in. You know, you get the regulators off your back, which is always a positive, because it means you can get on with the important work that you're doing. But also, it really benefits the farm, and it is all those win-wins. And the list that you reeled off of benefits to the business was fantastic. And I think everybody listening to this will be able to put their hat on one of those things and say, right, okay, if I do alternative waterings at my farm, I'll benefit this way, which is great and a really good opportunity for people to learn from a system that has been put in by yourself down there, which is great. Lots of the references and lots of the best practice documents can be found, some written by yourself, I think, on the Farming and Water Scotland website, which is www.farmingandwaterscotland.org. That's all free information written for the industry, so it is for you to take away and use at your will. Where perhaps you see yourself going in the future with a few more of these potential improvements on your farm that are going to be wins for the business and wins for the environment?
Yeah, so I think we're farming in really interesting times, terrifying times maybe, but there's a lot happening out there, and there's a lot of discussion about public goods and, you know, being funding for public goods. And I hope going forward that one of the public goods is in fact water quality, and perhaps we as an industry have already done a lot of good work in there as well, and those who have done, you know, invested money and made things happen, I hope that there's some reward or some pat on the back for having done that down the line. The biggest limiting factor to our business or our grazing system in the past was water. And now, because we've installed this watering system, the biggest limiting factor is actually my work rate, you know, how lazy I am, and also things like polywires and stuff that's all easy to buy. So we've got the building blocks there for a really quite an exciting grazing system, provided I'm up to it. What we've put in is quite a belt and braces type of system, but there's a lot of options out there for even, you know, gravity fed systems, and just think outside the box a wee bit and you know, develop a system that makes, it doesn't need to be best, it just needs to be a bit better. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's lots of opportunities, and we are, there's quite a few people like me who are quite passionate about this and always really keen to talk about it. So don't do it in isolation. You know, if you do need to discuss things and stuff, feel free to contact any one of us, SEC, SEPA, whoever in the system, to try and get the best, you know, the best out of what your system or your potential system.
Absolutely. So you mentioned there about the industry doing fantastic work in regards to water quality. What SEPA's kind of working with sectors now as our way of kind of regulating to see how we can work with sectors across Scotland in the future, and we've identified dairy sector, the livestock sector, the arable sector, and the food and drink processing sectors as really important groups to work with. And by no means are SEPA the experts in everything. Throughout the sector, we've got lots of people, internal and external stakeholders, who will be able to bring this information so that it benefits everybody. And I think that's one thing you just said then, you know, it's not a one fix for everybody. It's about using the resources, using the tools, and using the expertise of these people throughout the sector to basically get the right fit for you and make it resilient for the future, so it's good for the business and good for the environment. And I think that'll be a good place to stop the conversation today, if it's all right with you, Robert, just highlighting that fact that, you know, it doesn't have to be a win just for one part of your business. I think it's definitely a case of a win for both the environment and for your business as well. Don't forget, it is the farmingwaterscotland.org website. You can go on and have a look at all the information in regards to alternative waterings, all the information about how to put these in place. And there are a good number of examples which are up there as well, which you'll be able to have a look at. But don't forget, ask before you put these things in place, because a good system is great for the farm, great for the environment. A poor system can cause you some problems. So it's good to make the most out of the information that's out there. And thanks very much for listening, and tune in for the next podcast, which will be coming up soon. Thank you very much.